You're Smarter Than Us is a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Check out all of the coverage of Soccer in the Carolinas at soccer, the letter N, sweettea.com.
Oh, win the Blues!
Oh, win the Blues!
Go marching in!
Go marching in!
Oh, win the Blues!
You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast.
Hey guys, we're back with Ben the Soccer Goose. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing good. Just waiting out the off season of soccer with a little bit more exciting Arsenal soccer, so that's good.
Finally something to look forward to in our beautiful kits. I've been calling us beautiful corpses all season long. It's been so rough. And USL dropped their schedule today. Did you guys finally get some weekend rivalry games?
We did. To be honest with you, I haven't had the chance to really like dive into the details, but I know we always tend to get screwed over as far as midweek games and weird scheduled games. And I think we have like a midweek Charleston game that we play, so that feels annoying. And luckily, we do play them three times in the year, so that kind of makes up for it. But we've moved into an unbalanced schedule for whatever reason, which is a whole nother point of topic. And I don't think why we're here, so we don't have to go down that road.
Well, Ben, we are absolutely here to talk about soccer in Charlotte. And obviously, one of the things, kind of one of the seismic shifts that has happened within the past couple months since we last spoke, and since the end of the USL season and the NPSL season, is Charlotte now has an MLS team. And the Mint City Collective, their supporters group, you might have seen them all over Twitter or on your different social medias. The team itself does not actually have an identity or a brand. That's obviously going to be put out over the course of the spring. There has been some, I guess it's not rumors, but somebody has gone through and looked through the trademarks and found about eight different names that David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, who is also the owner of the MLS team, went through and trademarked, and there's going to be a fan vote or something along those lines. So we'll know more about the identity and the brand of the club. But the fact is, they are here, and I actually think they're about 13 months away from actually kicking a ball. They kind of came little turnkey because of the Panthers stadium, and they're actually going to jump ahead of some of the other MLS expansion teams. So whether we like it or not, and opinion varies, Charlotte does have an MLS team. And as you are a citizen of Charlotte and a soccer fan in Charlotte, who already had a pro team, although some people like to forget that, I wanted to bend your ear a little bit and see how you felt about this. But before we get too far into this David Tepper FC version of an MLS team, if I'm not mistaken, Ben, was there not a 3-4 years ago, maybe even longer than that, push to bring MLS to Charlotte that a different owner was attempting to curate?
Yeah, so I think it was around summertime 2017. I'm fuzzy on specific months, I guess you could say, and fuzzy on memories in general, but I know it was 2017. I know that for a fact. A certain royalty, I guess you could say, Bruton Smith was the main guy, being his son Marcus Smith was wanting to dive into the I guess the soccer verse, the soccer world, whatever you could call it, and he brought into fruition the initial MLS 4CL team, I think is what it originally was. It was a 2 or 4. It gets confusing at a certain point. But the initial MLS bid in Charlotte, whatever you want to call it, whatever it was branded. And it was interesting because it kind of seemed to come out of nowhere, if memory serves me right. And it was curious because a lot of what their plan seemed to be was mirroring what the independence plan has been since the beginning, quite frankly, without getting too far into the weeds. But the independence essentially launched in USL Pro with the hopes of bringing MLS to Charlotte one day. They launched, of course, back in 2015. But yeah, it was interesting when they kind of seemed to come out of nowhere. Because like I said, he was a NASCAR guy through and through. The Smiths owned I couldn't even tell you what it's called, but the Speedway up in Concord, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got big money. Not Tepper money, of course, but they've got money. But they've also, it was really interesting because they've also got a bad reputation, which I wish I knew the nitty gritty details, but from what I've read, and this is kind of going back in a foggy memory of mine, but a lot of people in Charlotte, in the Charlotte area, I should say, because it's more pertaining to Concord, felt that when the Smiths went to finance and something along the lines, there was some murkiness as far as when they were getting the Speedway made. If I'm not mistaken, there was a point that Bruton Smith wanted a certain street named after him that he was very adamant about. So that kind of tells you the legacy that they had in the Charlotte area, that they weren't looked at in the best light. Let me put it that way. They mm-hmm. seemed to be businessmen, but businessmen that you could see through their smile, I guess you could say. But yeah, that's really when it started, was back in 2017 with the original MLS in Charlotte push.
And was that attempted to play at Bank of America?
No. So the original, it's really interesting because the original push, as I kind of said before, but didn't go into detail, of course, their original idea was to play in Memorial Stadium, which has been and is going to be the home, or was planned to be the home for the Charlotte Independence, way back when they originally started. They were planning to renovate Bank of America Stadium, a stadium that's been there for decades and it's been underutilized and kind of let to wear down, unfortunately. So Marcus Smith's bid was to make a rather large version of what the Independents were trying to do at the time. And it's unfortunate to think about in a lot of ways, because Marcus Smith, like I said, kind of stole the playbook from the Independents, because he was going to play in Memorial Stadium. It was going to be in the heart of town. And if I'm not mistaken, there was even some, there was a potential that he may have taken some renderings as well from the Independents. So it wasn't as much as people acknowledged it for what it was. I don't think soccer people, I don't think even really people in the city took it very seriously, because there wasn't a lot of push. It was a weird thing because I had just moved to Charlotte that year. So I was getting to know the city and all these kinds of things. And there was a certain buzz around it. But at the same time, they were trying to create a grassroots effort to support the team that they weren't doing anything to build. But they weren't doing anything at the same time. So it was... We want to grow a grassroots effort, but we're not going to do anything, so we don't want to do too much. And they eventually did have a rally, I guess you could say, to drum up support, and they had it in one of the predominant parks in the city center of the town of Charlotte. And it was a pretty cool setup. It kind of exceeded my expectations, and it was cool to see it come to fruition because they had dog bandanas that were branded, they had flags mm-hmm. that were branded, they had scarves and shirts and things of that nature. But it was weird because they had bands and things like that. They had a huge stage, and they were hyping this guest that was going to come up and talk to the crowd. They had, I think, an old Panthers player maybe that I didn't even recognize, even though I have a little bit of football background in my youth. But they kept hyping this person that was going to come up on the stage that never came. So even their big presentation to the city kind of felt like it was poorly planned. And like I said, it wasn't bad, but thereafter, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head if they ever did anything after that, and I really don't think they did. So it was, they kind of stumbled out of the gates. They had a reputation that they needed to mend in a lot of ways, and their big presentation to the city was kind of just a big, at least that's the way I look back on it in a lot of ways, honestly. And the other thing too, that was, I think, really hurt their bid in a lot of ways, was because they were asking for a lot of public money. Mm-hmm. And it was a situation where we were lucky enough that the city council members of Charlotte did not approve what was going to be the package to renovate Bank of America Stadium for his MLS bid. As much as I don't feel like we're necessarily a great situation with the current MLS establishment in Charlotte. We could have been in a far worse situation, I feel. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny to look back on them because it just wasn't, they didn't really do anything. And there's a famous tweet they had where they were, eventually they came back after like 6 months or 8 months or something, where they said something to the effect of, don't confuse silence for lack of progress or something.
Famous last words.
Yeah. And then like radio silence thereafter. And it was just kind of a big joke, it felt like, in a lot of ways. And they never really moved anything forward. But like I kind of said, it's really annoying to look back on, because it was a kind of a half-baked idea, it seemed like. And honestly, it pushed back the independents considerably, where if Marcus Smith would have never tried to put forth an MLS bid back in 2017, when I think there was at least 10 to a dozen bids going on at this point across America. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think everyone and their cousin was trying to get an MLS team at that point. So it's just frustrating to look back and see that because of that, the independents were kind of stunted in their growth, because in a lot of ways, I feel strongly and confident that I would say that the independents would at the very least be playing in Memorial this upcoming 2020 season, in a renovated Memorial Stadium, I should say, if Marcus Smith would have never put forth a half effort to try to put MLS here.
So it was almost like they were relegated to being a minor league team to a major league team that never existed in the first place.
In a lot of ways, yeah. It was like, it was just a frustrating thing, because it was just such a half-assed idea. And it was... Yeah. And at a certain point, I forget the legality around this or the bureaucracy or whatever you want to call it, but the independence renovation for Memorial was either approved or was all but approved. Let me put it that way. And it was put on the back burner when Marcus Smith mm-hmm. came forward with this
yeah.
bid, if you want to call it.
So The most recent happenings, though, have certainly not been half-assed or half anything. I'm not exactly 100% sure of the timeline, but the Panthers owner, the former Panthers owner, Jerry Richardson, fell victim to loose hands, a Me Too movement, however you want to word it. He was kind of forced to sell. It was not a willing thing that he wanted to do, but basically his ownership of the Panthers was no longer tenable. David Tepper, who is, I've seen a number fluctuate somewhere between 12 and 14 billion. I mean, I guess when you're just discussing an extra $2 billion, you know, who cares? But he, what that does make him is the richest professional sports owner in the country. And I don't think we actually stop and appreciate that enough. It's, I mean, you're talking about Jerry Jones, Steve Ballmer, individuals, you know, who have, you know, legacy oil owners and Microsoft money. And here is David Tepper, who comes in and he made his money on the back of, I've got my own personal opinions about this, but he made his money kind of from the bank downfall in 2008 and kind of the restructuring that came up out of that. He basically was a hedge fund owner and made his money that way. So he comes in and he buys the Panthers and, you know, glad hands and comes into Charlotte, you know, the big banking center of the South. And almost immediately out of the gate, he says, I also want an MLS team. Now, he makes dubious, well, I guess they're not dubious, but he makes claims of, you know, loving soccer and coaching his kids' teams and soccer's in his blood. But he also has this stadium that, other than a few concerts and NFL games throughout the course of the season, is empty. And if he's a smart businessman, he needs more dates to fill the stadium. Of course, I'm not going to begrudge anybody that, because that's just good business. And that's what every other, you know, dual team owner across the country wants if you own your stadium. So yeah, he comes in and there was rumors, you know, he stated he wanted this. But just like you were saying, in 2017, everybody wants an MLS team. A few cities got them. You know, I guess by then LA already had their second one, the Chivas Zombies, and then Miami's popping up and Nashville's moving up. And there's a few come in here and there. You know, MLS is at 24. Minnesota already dropped in. Some of these old NASL teams had moved up and claimed their, you know, what they initially wanted when they went from NASL into USL or into just straight MLS. And there's movements, you know, it's soccer in America. Somebody's always moving somewhere. And almost immediately, though, there's so much smoke, you can't help but like see the fire through the smoke. I remember the first time that I knew it was going to happen. Like there was no longer a shadow of a doubt, even though there hadn't been a lot of movement, was when, and I believe you were at the game too, the Arsenal ICC game over the summer that was at Bank of America, where my seats were, they were in kind of in the lower bowl, but towards the back, closer to the concourse. And right in front of us were just maybe 100, what I'm assuming were employees of Ally Bank. And they were all wearing the exact same purple shirt that said Ally on the front. And then on the back said 21. I mean, yeah, I don't know that you can get any more explicit than that.
Yeah.
It very, very, you know, bluntly, you know, not even an announcement had been made. And here they are just, you know, kind of swinging their, you know, BDE around like, yeah, this is happening. We don't need to tell you what's happening. It's just going to happen. And, you know, they had made moves. Tom Glick, who, if I'm not mistaken, had gone from America to Manchester City, helped with NYCFC kind of forming.
Yeah, he helped in their launch, essentially, a lot of the ins and outs, I guess.
Yeah, and he was basically David Tepper's first hire. Like day one, hey, we're going to get an MLS team. We hire Tom Glick. So, I mean, the ball was in motion. Things were turning. The gears were in motion. And it happened very quickly, very quickly. And in December, I think it was actually December 17th or December 7th, a couple weeks before Christmas, Don Garber shows up on Mint Street and there's a big presentation and Charlotte has an MLS team. If I'm not mistaken, you attended the announcement?
I attended the after party, I guess you could say. Yeah, I wasn't able to make it for the morning press conference, mm-hmm. I guess you could say, the more suit and tie affair. But I was able to make it to the later to be announced open party event for the announcement.
So leading up to that, it the writing was on the wall. You know, there was it all became almost comical at some point when people are starting to discuss street closures and permits and, you know, it became a parody of itself at some point. But how are you feeling leading up to that? Big soccer fan in Charlotte. MLS is coming to town. How are you feeling?
It's been really interesting because, honestly, back in 2017, maybe I was a different kind of person. I don't know. But I was kind of interested in the MLS coming to town. I definitely wasn't as, I guess, skeptical as I am now. Granted, I probably would have been more skeptical if I was more entrenched in everything, knowing everything about the situation, but it's been a really interesting, honestly, it's only been about a year or so. I was trying to find it real quick with the date that Tom Glick was hired, but from the time he was hired, like you kind of said, he was an odd hire in a lot of ways because he's not a football guy, American football, I should say, like you talked about. He was a soccer guy, so it was kind of at a certain point, it became the worst kept secret in Charlotte, I think, is a lot of the news outlets termed it as, that MLS was coming to Charlotte. So it, for me, it was just frustrating because, and maybe I'll blame this on my millennialism, I craved information. So when this bit of information came out, I was like, okay, cool. So we've got till this time frame to figure out what the hell's going on. And then this other bit of information would come out a week later saying this completely other thing. So it was just a matter of just a wild, crazy ride, to be honest with you. And I think the thing that's been most frustrating for me, and along that same thought process of craving information and wanting information and being on Twitter way more often than I should have been and still am, is that there wasn't a lot of detailed information. So in a lot of ways, we knew MLS was coming here, but we didn't know the nitty-gritty details of what they were doing. As you talked about, there was a Arsenal versus Fiorentina friendly earlier in the year. And there was also a U.S. women's national team friendly this same year, well, being 2019, but the year moving up to when it was announced. And the proposed ownership didn't do anything to grab a hold of the soccer community there. Mm-hmm. It was just it felt like a standalone event. So for me, I'm a natural curious soccer fan where I watch MLS. I'm not anti-MLS in a lot of ways, but there wasn't any information to grab a hold of. There wasn't any Q&As. There wasn't any learn more to find out this, learn more to find out that. It felt like everything was being done behind closed doors in a lot of ways. And it definitely was specifically for me, the biggest hang up I've had with this whole process is the fact that Bank of America Stadium was going to have to be renovated to make it more soccer friendly, which I still don't think anyone actually knows what that means, quite frankly. I don't think I've kind of put this on the back burner figuring out information, but I still don't know for a fact that there's been an explicit receipt for where the $110 million that has been earmarked, but technically hasn't even been approved yet. As of recording date on 1/9/2020. So it's just been confusing and maybe annoying in a lot of ways, because for me, I want to know what is going to be $110 million that's going to go towards Bank of America that's going to make it soccer friendly. There's been rumors here and there, but there hasn't been a big press release from the club or in a news outlet that's saying $10 million going to this or $20 million going to make a center entrance, because that's what you do in soccer when you walk the kids out with the players. Why you have to do that, I don't understand. Because I don't know how baseball parks necessarily work, but I don't think they've dug a hole through Yankee Stadium. You know what I mean? Like, it's, and there's certain things where they'll have to make a new camera to make it soccer friendly, which I get, you have to do that. But there's other things along the lines of, I've seen in articles where they say that fans don't want to sit in their seats, so they're going to have to update the concourse so that fans can stand in the concourse and watch the games of soccer being played there. So it's like, that seems weird to me. maybe I'm too much of a soccer fan, but that feels really strange. And on top of it, the other thing that's really been, that I don't think gets talked about enough, and I think is, I'll preface this part with, the reason I've been as vocal on Twitter about this whole process is because I don't think there's been enough information brought up. I think, quite frankly, a lot of the news outlets in Charlotte have just been like, we're getting MLS. Hurrah, we did it. There's no reason to think twice about this. But like I've kind of said, there's been a lot of murkiness, and the $110 million, it's public money in the sense that it's tax money, but it's not a new tax revenue or anything along those lines. It's coming from I'm forgetting the term right now.
Is it a hospitality fund?
Hospitality fund, yes. Yeah. Which has to go towards these types of things.
Yeah.
But it's just the main thing for me, like I was saying, is the fact that the MLS headquarters that they're trying to build is going to be put on the east side of Charlotte.
So that's part of what this money was. Not so much earmarked for, but the renovation of the Eastland Mall that you're about to mention was basically the money was contingent on helping to revitalize that edge of town. Mm-hmm. And that's been one of those areas that has sat dormant for a very long period of time. It's an area that desperately needs economic rejuvenation. And here comes, again, $14 billion with a B, David Tepper coming in saying that he's going to do this and he's going to do this, and he just needs 110 to kind of get it over the top, because that's what rich people do. That's how rich people stay rich. They're businessmen. This is contingent upon it. So go ahead and describe, because I think this is a fascinating, more so, like, of course, there's the sports aspect, but this is the kind of like literal boots on the ground that people forget about when they discuss these things.
Yeah. And when you were referring to the Eastland Mall location, it has been a plot of land that the city owns, if I'm not mistaken, and has, like you said, been, I think it's been 10 years or so. It's been a number of years, way before my time in Charlotte, that it's been lying vacant, I should say. I think even honestly, at a certain point, the Independents may have tried to get a stadium over there. It's, soccer's been rumored to be going to that part of town in some capacity for years now. But for me, it's frustrating because I think on paper, it's great. It's going to be rejuvenated. it's going to be built up. Something needed to happen with that parcel of land, quite frankly. But I don't know that MLS does anything for it, personally. I mean, I don't... I'm very new to this whole spectrum of the... of looking at life, I guess you could say. Looking at politics, looking at whatever you want to call it. But I don't know that an MLS headquarters and a training facility and a mixed-use development is going to help the people of East Charlotte.
Who demographically, who makes up East Charlotte?
It's a very diverse area of town. It's also a lower income part of town. It's an area of town that, kind of like you said, it's been underappreciated, but at the same time, and this is kind of why I think that it may not be the best case scenario for MLS to move to this part of town, because it's going to change everything about that part of town. Because, like I think happens in a lot of cities, you've got a development and rejuvenating parts of towns is the ultimate goal, no matter what. If a part of town is not the best, it needs to be better. But at the same time, I think if you're going to be displacing people and you're going to be raising the rents of people in that area, I don't think that helps them. And I think that it should be pretty plain and simple to me, I think. It's a multifaceted thing, because, of course, there's going to be more money in that part of town, this, that, and the other. But the situation that Charlotte's in right now is, I don't know that plopping a development into an area of town such as that is actually going to benefit the people there, rather than just bring people in there that can afford those homes and displace people, which I don't think that helps those people, quite frankly. And I think I may be talking in circles at this point, but I think it's frustrating to me, because I think at a certain point you see a news headline and you see MLS is coming to town and we're getting another sports franchise, and why can it be bad? For anyone to think other than it being good is just being a wet blanket or negative. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of nitty-gritty details on what's going to happen with Eastland Mall specifically, and where this money is going to be going towards, and things of that nature that are really important, quite frankly, that are far more important than getting another sports team in Charlotte or a soccer team or whatever it may be.
Yeah, gentrification is a real thing. We're dealing with it in Asheville, on a much, much, much smaller scale than what's being threatened in Charlotte. But it's a real thing. And there's people who feel disenfranchised and pushed out of areas that they historically have lived in, or potentially why they moved here. I know when I lived in Charlotte, East Boulevard was... It was a place that meant something. It wasn't always necessarily the most posh or visited neighborhood. You can definitely tell when you go from Plaza Midwood and really hit that edge of that town. It becomes multicultural. They some amazing food through that corridor, mm-hmm. and some amazing people, you know, who travel into the city and work a lot of the jobs that, to be perfectly honest, the, you know, upper middle class white people don't want to do. And to push them further out of, kind of the city center, and further into the suburbs, you're effectively, you're going to end up eventually reducing your workforce and creating problems that you're attempting to solve by doing this in the first place. So there's definitely socioeconomic issues, and those are obviously nothing we're going to solve on this podcast, but it shows kind of the macro issues that bringing a massive, you know, what, $325 million expansion fee franchise into town creates. How has the soccer community in Charlotte felt about this move? I've seen kind of a divergence, and kind of a surprising divergence in opinion. I've seen a lot of people who, you were describing, you're not anti-MLS per se. You're not, you know, jumping heads and shoulders above everybody else to support the league as a whole, you know, single entity. It's not exactly like what the top divisions look like throughout the world, but it's what we have in America, and it's a very American version of soccer. But it seems like the soccer community in Charlotte has been largely, the large majority has been supportive of this move. Is that what you've seen, what you've witnessed?
I would say, yeah, in a lot of ways. I wish I was a more outgoing person, to be honest with you, and could go to Premier League bars and things like that to really get the pulse of everything. I mean, I think it was interesting being at the launch party they had, because or announcement party, whatever you want to call it, because there was a lot of people there. I'll say it was a good vent, a good space they did it in and everything, but I don't know that it was interesting to think about, because I'll preface this statement with, I may have been looking at it with a glass half full. I'll fully identify as that, but it seemed to me that there may have just been a lot of people there that were taking advantage of a free bar at a certain point. I don't want to say that I was classifying people with not wearing soccer kits or scarves or things of that nature, but there wasn't noticeably a lot of soccer people, I would say. There was a good bit of them. I'm not going to throw a wet blanket on it, but, and it was interesting to me because I don't know that there was less identifiable Mint City Collective members that I noticed in a large conglomerate. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that to disparage Mint City Collective in any type of a way. I have a very good relationship with the people that are involved with that. The people that are running that supporter group are doing a very difficult job. But it was interesting to see that there wasn't a uniformity to everything. It felt like it. And I think that's what's going to make it really interesting with MLS in Charlotte, is there hasn't been anything to unify the soccer community. And I think there's a lot of, even more so than just the soccer community in general, because as much as people may think that the ultras and the supporter group people make the majority of the people that are going to support the club, if you don't get the casuals, you're not going to have a club, quite frankly. But I think there was a lot of curious people there, maybe. But I don't know that there was maybe anything that really drew their interest, maybe. Like I said, I may be looking at it at a negative perspective, but I'll be curious to see how David Tepper, Tom Glick, Charlotte Town, whatever they end up being called, goes towards that casual fan. Because the thing about Charlotte is we're a very what's next city. I mean, I think we had 6 different breweries open up in the last calendar year. There's always something new to do. So as much as MLS is the top tier soccer and there's a lot of soccer fans in Charlotte, if you're not going to be able to grasp a hold of the casual fans and grasp a hold of those soccer fans, because what a lot of people may not know is much slack about the independent, or much slack as the independents get, I think some of the blame can be attributed to very fickle fans, where if it's not going to be the perfect thing or the thing I want, they're not going to support it.
I think my experience of Charlotte fandom is you nailed it. When I lived down there, obviously the Panthers were the big bad in town. The Bobcats were actually the basketball team in town. And, you know, the Panthers are kind of bulletproof. They, whether they go 1-15 or they go 15-1, they basically sell out every game. But I've seen, since I've lived in North Carolina, I've seen the Hornets and then the Bobcats and then the Hornets again, really kind of ebb and flow with how they actually do as a team. And what I don't think a lot of, well, I would imagine most people now, maybe not a couple years ago, realize is that Charlotte is not an actual, well, the makeup, the population makeup of Charlotte is not traditionally Southern. It's not Atlanta. It's not Charleston. It's not Savannah. It's, you know, in a way, it's not even Raleigh. It really is this kind of convergence of old South, almost like not antebellum, but, you know, kind of old money that attracted new money, you know, kind of out of New York, out of kind of some of these financial centers. And then Northerners honestly followed. So there's a reason why, you know, while the Panthers were just getting up off the ground, there were Buffalo Bills bars in town and Pittsburgh Steeler bars in town and New York Giant bars in town. And they brought with them that kind of Northern mentality of, you know, snow and gridiron and NFL football, rah, 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 which is why I think the Panthers are what they are. Now, there's been their children who were born and raised in Charlotte and are now, you know, actual Charlottesians and Panthers fans. That's why that sport works. The Hornets were amazing when they first came out, but so was basketball in the late 80s and early 90s, you know, the Michael Jordan heydays, blah, 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 blah. Soccer doesn't have that yet, and there's nothing in Charlotte that is inherently pro-soccer. It's not a Northern sport. It's not a Southern sport. It's the world sport, but I don't necessarily know that Charlotte has a reputation as being a worldly city. Do they have dozens and dozens and dozens of nationalities, and is it a cultural center? I guess you can say that. It truly is, but any metropolis is going to kind of attract that reputation. But I don't know that they've really wrapped their head around what it means to connect all those segments of society into sporting ambition and into sporting support. Now, you know, a little bit to the northeast, there was a city in the Triangle area, Raleigh. And, you know, let's, I guess, put aside sporting rivalries just for a second. And, you know, the former Carolina Railhawks, you know, when the eventual NCFC and they're kind of traipsing through the NASL and then Malik, you know, pulling them out of that, their owner, Stephen Malik. And, you know, they had MLS ambitions also. And you see, you know, you mentioned the women, the U.S. women's national team coming off of, you know, their fourth World Cup win coming to Charlotte and barely filling the lower bowl. Whereas when they go to Raleigh, you know, Raleigh's out there with the NWSL two-time champions. They're out there having the ICC of women's football out there. It's not necessarily a knock on Charlotte to say that Raleigh just kind of does soccer a little bit better than Charlotte. Not necessarily talking about the individual teams, but, you know, the Triangle area is known as with the colleges and the youth systems and the academies, they just kind of do soccer a little bit better. Do you think that they have a right to feel a little spurned that Tepper came in and kind of almost took their bid out from underneath them?
I think for me, I don't even know that I have to put my rivalry aside. I think on paper, if you look at it, aside from, and of course you have to look at the ownership, but aside from the ownership wealth, I think you almost have to go towards Raleigh. And I think what you talked about there with the colleges there that are strong in soccer, and there are some in Charlotte as well. UNC Charlotte has a very strong program.
Absolutely.
Their goalkeeper was just picked 13th, I think, in the Super Draft. They've been churning out talent, quite frankly. But at the same time, I think really the difference between Raleigh, the Triangle, and Charlotte soccer ethos is the fact that Raleigh really has more of the deep roots of soccer, I would feel. And Charlotte's kind of, it's the untapped potential is the allure of it. And I think it's been interesting to me because on paper you see, oh, well, Tepper's just going to do what Atlanta did. And he's got his billions of dollars, and he's going to follow the blueprint, and he's going to make it work. Do not believe under any capacity that anyone will be able to replicate what Atlanta has done. I just don't. I think that was a flash in the pan. As far as growing the culture, I think it will last, quite frankly. I don't mean flash in the pan as in short-lived, but I think there were a lot of positive factors that you cannot simply replicate with money in another city.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could not have said that any better.
Yeah.
And I think the continued from some, not everybody, but the continued efforts by some of these nascent kind of Charlotte MLS fans to say, well, just look at Atlanta, we can do that. Look at Atlanta, we can be that. Look at Atlanta, that's our natural rival. We'll be there in a year or two. I think that's very, very foolish, and I think it can only set them up for failure. So last thing, but and then I saved enough time so we can get into this. What does this portend for the future of the independents? It's been I've widely let my opinion on MLS be known. I'm not shy about it. I don't think it's portraying the sport the right way to an American audience who only has a certain amount of time to be exposed to world soccer until they let me rephrase that. There's only a certain amount of time that they can continue to see American soccer before they will never accept world soccer. And I think that time's closely approaching. I think we're about to lose any chance at replicating any of the top tiers anywhere else around the world. I think the idea of solidarity payments and pro rel and some of these things that are, you know, kind of silly conversations to have on Twitter and stuff. But the reason they're silly now is because that pendulum has swung so far one way that you're never going to get a majority of fans or new fans to accept anything different, because at a certain point, that sort of stuff, even though it's 99% of the world, is not going to be seen as American. And then we do things American. So, yeah. You know, soccer in Charlotte right now is kind of in that hotbed, and kind of the opinions are being molded. And I fear, and I've already seen language by the owners of the independents, that they are already portraying themselves and positioning themselves. A lot of listeners may not know that I don't know if you can call them the most successful from a business sense, but it is the most attended minor league baseball team resides in Charlotte, the Charlotte Knights. They used to, I think they've bounced back and forth. They used to be like an Orioles affiliate, and I think they're a White Sox affiliate now. But they used to play in a stadium right over the border in South Carolina in Fort Mill. If I'm not mistaken, I think like on the same exit as Six Flags or something like that. It was just a very bland, you know, stadium that, you know, cookie cutter, nothing special about it. But, you know, the games were fun and stuff. And about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 6 or 7, they built this gorgeous stadium in the heart of downtown Charlotte with amazing, you know, views from that. You know, it's just an amazing stadium. And almost every year since, they've topped minor league baseball in attendance, and they just continue to do amazing things. And so I feel like the Independents have already acquiesced and just said, we want to become the Charlotte Knights of soccer. We want to become the alternative to $35 general admission tickets and suites. And, you know, we're renovating Memorial, and you can take your family of four out to a game, buy tickets and a Coke and a hot dog for the same price it would cost to get a lower bowl ticket to one game for, you know, MLS Charlotte. And that's so disheartening to me. That's so disheartening to me. As an Independents fan, how does it make you feel? And how does it make Jack's Militia feel? And how does it make, you know, those friendly faces that you and Chris see, you know, down at the Sportsplex down in Matthews for, you know, 8 months out of the year?
I think at a certain point, for me, I don't want to try to speak for everybody in general and Jack's Militia and Independents fans, but I feel like at a certain point, it's just made me jaded about soccer, quite frankly. Where there's been times where I'm just like, is it even worth it to do this whole support soccer thing? Because if this is the outcome we're going to get, it's interesting. But to answer the question, as far as in regards to the Independents specifically, I think it puts them at a tough crossroads, to be honest with you. Kind of like you said, it kind of puts them at a point where they can either continue to be independent and be the David against Goliath in Memorial Stadium, which will be their home, I'm crossing my fingers. You can't see that on a podcast, but barring renovation problems at Memorial.
Yeah, let's stop catching in 2021 that thing on fire.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where they can either go the route of being an independent club, being a cheaper alternative for soccer, which I think, I don't personally believe that it would work, but I think there's a potential it could, because in a lot of ways, there, with MLS coming to town, it's going to raise the awareness of soccer in Charlotte. Whether that's going to be everyone or whether that's going to be the soccer fans in general, it's going to raise a curiosity for the game in a lot of ways. So you could find the Independents, find their niche as a cheaper option, a more family-oriented option maybe. And personally, for me, the only way that option will play out beneficially for the Independents as an independent club is being an accessible club. Because I know it becomes, when you're an NPSL club or a NISA club or the punk rock clubs, you're a little more accessible. But I know for a fact what I've found exceptionally superb about the Independents is that they've been accessible. Me as a fan have been able to interview players. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to be able to do that with an MLS club. It's never going to happen. And I think for me, I think you can find your niche in that and wiggle into a way of finding your identity and being the underdog and being the team that is going to have their players sign autographs until they're flicking off the lights to get them to go in the stadium. The other alternative is maybe they'll have to be a two team for the MLS club. And I don't know that I love that scenario. I think it makes a lot of sense from a business perspective, because you're going to have the money of the MLS club funding you and keeping you afloat, and you're not going to be going uphill as much. In an ideal scenario, I would love for the Independents to be an independent club and fight that fight against MLS and show everyone in Charlotte in Memorial why I've grown to love them. But I honestly feel like I almost hate to say it because it's the easier route, but the more business perspective route would be to be that two team. And I don't like either scenario. I don't like either scenario because I don't know that neither one of those comes with certainty, quite frankly. And I think that's honestly where I lie on this whole spectrum and why I've sent out angry tweets and things like that is that there's just so much uncertainty still. It's
it's an interesting time to be a fan of soccer, period, in America. Yeah. whether you're a casual, whether you're a diehard, you know, we all have something on the line, and there's all, you know, it always seems the more invested you are, the more pounds of flesh that you have to give to kind of continue to. It's just not something you have to justify in baseball and NFL and oftentimes in hockey and the basketball fans that are extremely diehard. But in soccer, a sport that isn't completely baked yet in this country, you know, you never know where your feet are. It always feels like you're kind of on these sifting sands of, you know, we saw the USL League One fans up in Lansing get their club ripped out from underneath them by an owner. There were situations out in Fresno. You know, even Wichita just announced within the past week, or I guess they haven't even announced, but there's reports from protagonists that they aren't going to play this year, theoretically with an eye on turning professional. But, you know, look at Rochester and Penn FC, and, you know, for every club that is newly, you know, pardon the pun, minted and coming in and being created, it's almost like they have to do that on the back of several other failed lower league existing clubs and clubs that almost never got up off the ground. And then you've got your legendary clubs that had been around for a long, long, long time. You know, look at the Charleston Battery, who, you know, just basically had to sacrifice the oldest soccer-specific stadium in the country, move across the river, and now they're playing at a college with a new owner who, you know, wants to build a new stadium. But even things that are kind of historic and look ironclad again and again prove not to be. So, yeah. Ben, thank you so much, though. I really appreciate you jumping on with us, and thanks, we will certainly check in with you throughout the course of, I guess, the next 14 months leading up to, you know, MLS in North Carolina. So we'll talk to you soon.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues. Time on our hands could be time spent with Bruce. Drinking like tourists, yelling like drunkards, scoring some stunners.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast. Shoot us an email at youresmarterthanus@gmail.com or find us on Twitter @YOURE_smarter.